This settlement, the release just came out while we're on the air, actually 10:03 a.m. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I think, and you may hear some noise in the background because I'm on the green limo, so you may hear next stop is Union.
Okay.
So we'll leave that in the background and say that, you know, anything that deals with the health of players and their families to me is critical. I get calls from players, you know, typically it's never from the player. It's from the wife or it's from, you know, the kid who says, I want dad back. What happened to dad? And so you're moving forward, understanding that it's a violent sport that we play. And sometimes bad things happen. And with the speed and having no out of bounds, I think it's critical that we move forward in the right way. And this settlement is going to help players that need help, whether it's to get that, you know, functionally integrated to the world again and to get the world functionally integrated to them. So I embrace it. I applaud the NHL for moving forward with these guys. And most of them are my friends. Most of them are guys I played with, against. And so if this gets them functionally integrated back to their world, then I applaud it.
We should mention, by the way, that it's a non-class settlement. The NHL does not acknowledge any liability for any of the plaintiffs' claims. However, the parties agree that settlement is fair and reasonable resolution. And you know, there are more than 100 players who were former players who were part of the lawsuit. It was the original plan was to try to make it a class action lawsuit, but a U.S. district judge in Minnesota in July denied that bid. Had that class action bid been allowed, more than 5,000 players would have been allowed to join the case. So, you know, I mean, and Glenn, this is, you know, this is something, I think it's safe to say, something every sports league is going to be dealing with I think this is something where every league's going to be dealing with for from now on. I mean, I just think it is. It's kind of, I hate to say it, but I think from the league's point of view, and I'm not just talking about the NHL, I'm talking about the NFL, CFL, any sport, it's almost unfortunately become a cost of business, hasn't it? But it has been.
And you know, hey, I played through the times when I had no idea what CTE was. No clue. I was part of the initial kind of baseline testing and thought, well, this is kind of silly. You know, and actually in some ways I didn't even try on the baseline testing because I thought, what if I'm caught and I can't play in a game? Well,
right.
So, you know, that was the mentality back then. This is so different than football where, you know, you look at football and they had doctors that were doctoring reports up that were really negligent and were basically full-blown lies. They had, you know, a football helmet sponsor where they knew the helmet was inferior, but they took the money and ran. This is totally different in every way. And so, yeah, there will be no out of bounds. The game only gets faster. Things happen in a quick way. And so, you know, the league's trying to get on the leading side of the curve. And, you know, good on them for doing it. They were one of the first sports to do baseline testing, one of the first sports and maybe the only one to do concussion spotting. And so they've tried to be progressive with this. And, you know, for any of the players that are going through hard times and are troubled, I applaud the fact that now they can get some help. Let's get that brain and the compass back to north. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that and get them functionally integrated and get them, you know, where if it's a masking agent that they're taking to make their day go better and they go from 4 Vicodin or Oxycontins to 2, then, you know, good on this because now they get 50% more of their day back with their right. family. But you're right. It's a problem. It's not going to go away. Unless we ban hitting from the game, and that's just not going to happen.
Really well said, Glenn. We'll move on to the Leafs in this West Coast road trip coming up. Do you have any problem with the way Mike Babcock used his goalies this weekend?
No, you've got the Hall of Fame game on Friday. You really have to put on a big night for the guys that have built the game. Marty Brodeur, I mean, my goodness, are you going to play your backup?
That's a good point. I had not thought of that, I have to admit, but yes.
Okay. And you know, it's a special weekend this weekend. I mean, I'll be at the induction tonight. It's probably the only time I get to go into the hall, which is fantastic. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be in the big room, and that's okay. I'm good with that. But you know, these are guys that have built the game, and you know, you play at home, you want to put on a big game for your fans. You're paying $5 million a game. You want to win. Mm-hmm. And it was up to Sparks who got the chance on the back to back in a tough building to put on a show, and he didn't. And that just goes to show you that Boston team, they've rebuilt that thing, but they're still to be feared. And Tampa Bay, when you play them, there's your benchmark as well. So you're starting now a quarter of the way into the season to see your benchmarks, to see who you've got to compete against to get through and deep in the playoffs. And that's a game back-to-back, tough building. Garrett, you needed a win. You didn't get it. I have no problem with the way they play the goalies. And in some ways, I would have just played back-to-back for Freddie.
Really? Said, okay.
You know what? Throw him into it.
You got a couple of days off, right?
Yep. Back-to-back. There's nothing fair in hockey. There's no competition medal. Screw it. Win both games and play your best guys. That being said, it's not a long trip. I mean, what's an hour flight to Boston?
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. It's not like you're going across the country. So that would be my only criticism. But playing Freddie on Friday, no issue with that.
What'd you make of Sparks' performance? Technically, he looks to me, and I'm no goaltending coach, obviously. He looks to me like he kind of gets pinned into the net. Like it's almost as if he's afraid to leave the net at times and plays really deep.
Yeah, and that's the hard part about not playing for a couple of weeks. It just, you know, the game when and I've been there, I've lived it. It's almost like you're playing the game and you're looking at it through the other side of a telescope, so everything looks so small. You're just surviving. Just, like, get me through this. And so in some ways, you don't want to be aggressive. You don't want to handle the puck. He's a good puck handler. He's probably the only guy in that Leaf practice area that actually goes to the shooting area where they have in the back part of the rink where you can shoot pucks. He's the only guy who uses it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he loves to handle the puck. But, you know, when you don't play for a long period of time, that is the first part of your game that goes. And being deep and not being aggressive, that's another part of your game that goes. So it's survival. And unfortunately, it's a team like Boston that has a pretty good track record against the Maple Leafs.
Do you take anything away from that game when it comes to, you know, Garrett Sparks' long-term use for this team?
No. I think Babcock probably has it penned down. There's nothing by chance with him. He probably has a pretty good idea when he's going to use him next. Just hasn't told him. But there's no doubt that he's got a strategy to everything he does. If you were to go in Babcock's office and say, give me the practice that you used a year ago on a Wednesday in the morning, he would have it written down and in a binder. Like, this guy's a detailed guy. So, unfortunately, the next start will probably be like the last start. It's not going to be a good start. It's going to be a back-to-back, and it's going to be where, you know, it's not advantageous for the backup goalie to get to have that start. That's just the way it is. That's the way it is for a backup. Sucks, but that's why you're paid the big bucks and are asked to win games that you probably, you know, you're out of your element.
Glenn, that Bruins line is a growing concern right now, aren't they?
And good players, right? I mean, these are Pasternak in particular. Here's a guy who was passed over by so many teams. I actually read one of the team's scouting reports when he played a game in Sweden, and basically their scouting report said, there's not enough mustard for this hot dog. I wouldn't draft him. He's a bottom six player. Oh, okay, bottom six. All right, well, here you go. And that general manager doesn't have a job anymore. It's a great thing about getting to read some of your buddy's scouting reports. But, yeah, it's a complete line. They've got tremendous skill, good speed, and just they've been there, right? They're weathered. They've been deep in the playoffs. They know how to get it done. They know how to win. They know how to play and compete, and they showed it on the weekend.
If you're the Leafs, and I know there'll be a lot of people saying this morning, if you're the Leafs, is this just a reaffirmation or an affirmation of the fact you want to delay facing the Bruins as long as you possibly can in the playoffs? Or, Glenn, is that really overdone? Because they had success against the Bruins in the regular season last year, and it didn't amount to a hill of beans. So, I don't know. Maybe you don't have success against them in the regular season, you end up having success against them in the playoffs.
No, there's an Achilles heel for almost every team.
Yep.
I know when we won the Stanley Cup with the New York Rangers, we couldn't beat Detroit for the life of us.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a good team and, you know, had won a couple Stanley Cups and were on the cusp of doing some big things. They had a deep lineup. And they lost to San Jose in the first round in Game 7 in overtime. We were jubilant that they were gone. They were done. The team in the West that was our Achilles heel, done. Team in the East that was our Achilles heel, the Philadelphia Flyers. We couldn't compete with, you know, the Eric Lindros and the Legion of Doom. And guess what? Washington Capitals beat them. Wow. Okay, first round. They're done. Our kryptonite in the East is gone. And so we just kind of wheeled our way through and played a 500 team in Vancouver for the Stanley Cup. And that was a nice clear sail for us. But yeah, there are teams that you have a real difficult time competing against. And the quicker Boston can get beat by somebody else, the better. And the quicker that Tampa can get beat in the East, the better. So no question. There's teams that, you know, when the Leafs play them, they fear the Leafs. They're too fast. They can score. They turn the puck over the right way and go to offense as quick as you can. And you can't compete with them. You can't skate with them. Well, Tampa Bay doesn't think that way. Mm. They think they can compete with them and play with them. And as fast as you may be, we're faster. And so there are certain teams that just when you line up the chessboard, they've got more pieces than you. And two of the teams in the East would be Boston and Tampa.
Elliot Friedman reporting, and you know, of course, we're not going to let you get away without talking about William Nylander. Elliot Friedman reporting that the Leafs are now soliciting offers. They're basically telling. It sounds like they're telling teams to sort of give us a list of guys that are, you know, that we can't touch. Give us a list of guys who are available for William Nylander. The more this goes on, the more this gets closer to that deadline. Does it become easier or harder for Kyle Dubas to make a trade?
Well, I think when it comes to Kyle, and this is the only time that a club has leverage on a player. This is it. Because when Nylander gets signed to his next deal, he will have arb rights, he'll have free agency rights, he will be in the driver's seat. He will be able to make the decision that he wants to make.
Boom. Sounds like we dropped Mr. Healy's line. I presume he was at Union Station. I think that's a pretty safe bet. Hey, did you hear the GO train? What do you call it, the green limousine? I'd be worried for a minute, the green limousine. I'm sort of some disturbing images about green limousines. We have Glenn Healy back. Go ahead. It was a great thought. Keep going.
Yeah, it was really good. Yes, yeah. It's the dark zone and the green limo, the GO train.
We've all been there.
Must be talking in the quiet zone, and they just zap my phone. But this is the only time that there's leverage for Kyle Dubas, and he's got to send a message, I think, to you know, every player that they draft moving forward, that when you come out of your entry-level contract, we're going to dictate kind of where you fit in salary-wise so you can fit in with the comfort level of our team. The thing with Nylander, like, the player's going to make $80 million in his career. Like, call a spade a shovel. He's going to make that money. He's going to get it at some point. It might take him 10 years, 12 years. He's going to get it. He's a dynamite player. And so, you know, if I was to give him any advice, it would be, get back and play with this group. They're the favor to win the Stanley Cup. At some point, you're going to get your money. And this is a guy who worked at the Players Association and advocated always getting more money than anyone was worth. But at some point, you're going to get it. Get it with this group. Win a Stanley Cup here in Toronto. And by the time this career is all said and done, you'll have $80 million in the bank. And life is going to be okay for Willie and his group moving forward. But right now, it's the only time that the club has leverage. Mm. And are they going to think about trading him? Yeah, of course. They've been thinking about it since the minute he was a holdout. Like, this is not news. It's not news. Elliot, I'm sorry. It's not news. This is, you know, they're taking calls all the time. Teams are looking to improve their group. And a player of this ilk, especially when he finished the season the way he finished it last year, can help every club in the National Hockey League. It just, you got to find a way to fit him into the salary structure of the next team he plays for. Hopefully it's not a team that's 31st in the league, because that doesn't make for a fun career.
What message does it send to Marner and Matthews if you end up trading Nylander? Does that send any message to them at all?
No, they don't care.
Okay.
I mean, they're getting up today. They're putting their skates on left foot, then right, and going out and having a good time and playing the game the way they want to play it. They understand the nuances of contract demands and that's just part of the business of hockey. These guys at 12 years old are schooled on what the National Hockey League's all about. They all have psychologists, and they've got agents, and they've got financial advisors way before I did when I was a player. So they get it. They understand. You know, William Nylander is going to do what he's got to do for William Nylander. And likewise, Matthews, when he gets the bat, he's going to try to hit a home run as well. So will Marner. And those players, I mean, really, they're looking at this saying, you know, in a lot of ways, the Leafs aren't paying for a vacation this summer because you know, next summer they got to go on a big vacation. And so they're saving some of their fishnagels for doing contracts that are going to be more pressing next year.